at St. Paul City Hall. A toy rabbit, pastel-colored eggs, and a sign with the words Happy Easter were removed from the lobby of the City Council office because of concerns they might offend non-Christians. The council secretary had put up the decorations. They were not bought with city money. St. Paul's Human Rights Director, Tyrone Terrell, asked that the decorations be removed, saying they could be offensive to non-Christians. And there you have it. Welcome to the Hellbound Alley program.
It's a war against Easter.
I'm Allie, and the person shouting is Francois, of
course. Yes, of course. I'm always shouting.
And there's reason to shout, because these people have no clue whatsoever, and I would like to direct you to my blog at hellboundalley.blogspot.com for a recording about this issue.
I did not know that the Easter Bunny was Christian.
Well,
that's revisionism.
If you would all take out your Bibles and turn it to the book of Peter, Cottontail, and you will notice the passage about the egg of many colors. And,
oh, really?
Yes. You know, we must take the peeps to the people. So.
No, that's good. That's good. Take the peeps.
And Jesus said unto them, the peeps of the crispy yellow coating. So yeah, for
crazy.
Some reason, someone thinks that fluffy Easter bunnies and colored eggs are in the Bible. And, I don't know, maybe it's offensive to non-pagans, so that's why they should take it down. I don't know. As long as they're not spending money,
Well, there isn't any more information on that, so I don't know.
We'll have to see.
It just seems absolutely ridiculous, and they obviously, like most Christians, have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, you know, if you listen to our show enough, you know that we make fun of people who think that Christmas is definitely Christian.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we went through the pagan origins of Christmas, and a lot of people know that now, but apparently Easter, people aren't quite as informed about the pagan origins of Easter, and it can be confusing with Christmas, because the word Christ is right in there.
Well, how can you say that Christmas is completely Christian? apart from the tree, the gift-giving, the
celebration of birthdays. the thing is, those pagan things
that
people used in Christmas were incorporated into a Christian, observance, whatever you want to call it. But bunnies and eggs really haven't been considered Christian, as far as I knew, until now. The word Easter itself, I'm trying to think of where Jesus is in that word. And, of course, we know that Easter corresponds to several meanings, including spring and a specific goddess who's identified with the rabbit. And
we have some guests, by the way.
That's right. We do. We have, of course, our good friend Stefan Molyneux is here with us. Hi, Stefan.
Hello, how's it going?
Pretty good. And a new guest, why don't you introduce him?
Well, he has a very popular blog. He's one of the well-known atheist bloggers, and he was in the movie The God Who Wasn't There. Raving Atheist is with us.
Woohoo!
Hello, Ari.
Hi.
Raving Atheist?
Good afternoon.
Oh,
okay, we're losing his connection, but I think it'll right itself soon enough. There we go, we got him.
I won't move. Yeah, I don't know if it's my mic or yours.
It kind of comes and goes. We hear you fine, and then we kind of lose you.
We're hoping it's not the internet.
The internet is down.
It's the internet. So anyway, I think atheists should be able to enjoy Easter if they want to. If they don't, it doesn't matter to me. I haven't celebrated Easter for a while, but I have fond memories of chocolate and egg dyeing and bunnies. Of course, we always went to church. That was the difference.
Yes.
We always went to church on Easter, but we didn't always go to church at midnight on Christmas. I don't know why. But to when I was growing up, Easter was always much more religious for me.
I am hearing some background noise.
What you're hearing sounds like keyboard typing.
Sounds like someone is typing on the keyboard there.
But we like it when our guests are constantly thinking and working. Because that's the way we are.
That's what this show's for.
Yeah.
It makes you think. It doesn't matter when. You know?
Speaking of thinking, I spent, before lunch, I already had two entanglements. I keep on getting messages from people. Normal Bob Smith got a comment from an agnostic, and he quickly emailed me to make sure that I make fun of the agnostic, and that was fun because it was somebody else who said that atheism was stupid and untenable, and only agnosticism could be the correct position. And then I got an email from a lady who took it upon herself to remind me that I was going to suffer outrageous horror and suffering.
That's nice.
Which is nice before lunch, because actually, to tell you the truth, I don't get that much. But I have made a recording that's been making its way around the internet lately, which I'm kind of proud of. I made a recording called A Civil Discussion, which was inspired by Stefan when he did a podcast about talking with others about military service and war. And I was talking about how we can sit down and have a civil discussion with people, but there is that aspect that they think that it is just and right that you should be tortured forever in hell.
Yeah.
And I kind of turned it upon itself, and it's also on my blog at hellboundalley.blogspot.com if you want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I also link to it from my blog.
Cool. I've been getting a lot of feedback about that, so I'm kind of
mm-hmm.
happy about it.
So the topic of your entry basically is that...
Okay, so you're having a discussion with someone.
Right.
How can you, if you want to have a civil discussion with someone, if you begin the discussion by telling them that you believe that they should be harmed or killed or tortured, it's kind of strange that you would expect that they have a discussion civilly with you, and that it's terrible that others like you are so confrontative but it's okay, you're one of the good ones.
there's a weird thing in the modern world, I've never quite understood it, where, you know, and I've talked about this in my podcast, but there's, I get a lot of criticism for using harsh language or for being strong-willed or for being overly aggressive. You know, when I was talking to a Marine or I'm talking to a religious person who claims that the Bible is true, you know, and I sort of point out, well, there's a gun in the room. I'm not holding it. You're holding it. You know, like if I don't pay for the military, I'm going to get shot. And if the Bible is right, then you kind of need to put me to death, right? And so these people get all upset with me because I'm pointing out the gun in the room. Like, it wouldn't be there if I didn't point it out, or I'm somehow magically creating it just by pointing and saying, look, you guys kind of want me dead. And that's the problem that I have with you. And it's a weird thing. Like, if I don't point it out, it's not there. I've never quite understood that.
Exactly. Yeah,
right.
Definitely. Because you make the conversation become... when you do that, you point out the inherent uncivility of the conversation, which... is uncomfortable because people don't want to have to think about the negatives of military force or religion.
Well, especially for atheists too. I mean, it's not like it's been more than 200 years since they were putting us to death anyway. So it's not even like we're making this stuff up, right? I mean,
yeah,
throughout history,
it got
killed pretty regularly.
But us atheists have been having civil discussions with people like that because we have to. I mean, if we live in this culture or whatever, you know, a lot of us grew up with parents like that, and it's just amazing to me. We can, but But when someone like the lady that emailed me comes out and says, you know, straight out, you're going to suffer forever and be tortured, you know, there's really no reason to have a civil discussion, you know, with someone like that. But oftentimes we're talking to people that we have to live with.
I don't have any great objection to incivility. My blog is incivil. The way I speak to some people on every topic is incivil. And I think sometimes you have to say to people, you're stupid, you're an idiot, sit down and shut up, I know much more than you. That's the only way you sort of express the social sanction against certain sorts of beliefs. If somebody was talking about, you know, any kind of racism or a practice of infanticide or something like that, at some point you do have to raise your voice. On the more simple level, something like somebody says, well, I think I can run into traffic. Of course you're going to shout at that person and say, it's dangerous. I think the problem is, from the other side, they have the same perspective because they do honestly, and many of them very sincerely, believe that if you don't have a certain set of beliefs, you are going to roast in hell forever.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
from their
point.
Perspective, there's no reason for them not to warn you in very angry terms, just as if they were talking to a child who's about to make the mistake of stepping off the roof or into the street. And obviously, at some point, calling people stupid is not effective. But
we kind of lost the connection a little bit there.
Ooh, I bet you that was the best point ever, too.
Yeah. But I'm afraid we'll have to stop this now and move along. I just wanted to let you all know that our show is available on our station, our Hellbound Alley station, every evening, and our web address, of course, is hellboundalley.com, and you can contact me if you want to warn me, because you're a good person, that I might roast in hell. You can email me at allie@hellboundalley.com. That's A-double-L-triple-E. And you can also hear us and my other recordings at freethoughtradio.com all day long.
So our topic today is abortion. And I thought we should have a round table on the topic, because we have with us, of course, Stefan, who is pro-choice but thinks that abortion is socially negative. Isn't that right?
Well, yeah, I mean, socially negative is one of these complicated concepts, so I know what you mean. Say that generally it's undesirable.
Yeah,
any kind of government legislation against it. It's, you know, sort of like excessive drug use or something. You know, generally we'd say it's not a great idea, although I do like the music of the Doors, so it's hard to say that too. But generally it's not economically productive, and it generally only exists because of government subsidies, by and large. So it's a bad thing in general, like it's a bad decision, and the best way to get rid of people's bad decisions is to change the economic incentives for them.
True.
Through freedom, right? Through the free market.
Yeah, and we also have Raging Atheist, who is not pro-choice.
That's correct. I'm both anti-choice, meaning I am in favor of the recriminalization and other legal restrictions on abortion. And now you're connected.
We can't hear you right now. You're coming in and out again.
You don't have anything downloading in the background or any other internet activity where you are, do you?
Maybe we should stop a little bit here too, just to let Raving Atheist
reboot
the channel.
Yeah,
reboot.
We can.
Well, you know, you also might
break.
Have your Skype settings to use. I don't know if you can use maximum bandwidth for quality or something. It might be more than your data line can handle.
Okay, well, we'll fix this problem, and we will be right back.
Yes, we'll be right back.
We are libertarians. Why?
Because we believe in freedom.
Freedom from the loan shark Democrats and Republicans making us slaves to their taxation.
Freedom from environmentalism gone insane.
Freedom to get back our Bill of Rights.
And most of all, the freedom to control our lives again.
That's why we are libertarians.
Visit us at lpcolorado.org and fight the tyranny.
Regain your freedom.
lpcolorado.org.
Okay, we're back. Sorry about that. So, Ari, you were saying how you're against abortion. What is your moral stance?
My moral stance is that the fetus conception is a form of human life, which is worthy of human protection. That essentially, that is when I don't draw up distinctions between the stages of pregnancy or after pregnancy. I mean, I see many people who will say that a human is not a moral person between 3 months and 6 months after birth and hasn't reached the level of self-consciousness. And, of course, the people all along the spectrum, from conception to even after birth, who draw different lines. My position is simply that I was not a human being and no one on earth was a human being until conception, and they remained that way from that point on until the day they die.
All right.
And that the main moral problem with abortion is that it ends all future enjoyment. All future life.
All right, so let's start. First of all, there's the whole atheist-theist issue, which, of course, I think the issue of abortion is very much divided on religious lines, which is why it's interesting to have an anti-choice atheist on the show. And I guess my question is more addressed to R.A. in terms of how can he be both an atheist and anti-choice, but Stefan can also maybe say something about the relevance of religion to the abortion issue. So why don't you start, R.A.?
Okay, well, actually, I might actually approach that somewhat backwards. What I can't understand is why religious people are anti-choice. The most common religious argument I hear against abortion is that the human being has a soul from the moment of conception. Now, if that's the case, they shouldn't care about killing a fetus. They shouldn't care about killing a human being, because if it's an eternal soul, it lasts forever. And they shouldn't particularly worry about killing a fetus, because if it's innocent, it's going to go to heaven. There's really no harm. And in fact, they shouldn't care about murder at any stage of the continuum, because there's nothing lost. You simply go to a different realm of existence. I think atheists have a much more significant reason to be against abortion, because basically you simply do get only one chance, and that it starts at conception. And if you're eliminated at that point, you never enjoy anything. So I've always wondered why it's become a particularly religious issue. Also, on the topic of atheism, I don't think a lot of people would question an atheist who oppose a very late third trimester abortion. They wouldn't say, well, you know, you're an atheist. How could you possibly be opposed to that? And I think what that really feeds into is the stereotype of atheists who don't care about life at all. And frequently atheists are asked, why do you oppose murder? Life is meaningless, it's short, there are no consequences to killing anybody. But I really don't think the question of murder or the question of abortion are any different from the atheist perspective or necessarily from the theistic perspective. It's simply, the central question is, when does life begin? And I simply see it, sharing a view with many religious people, that the spectrum starts at conception, whereas most other people, religious and non-religious, on the pro-choice side, seeing it starting either at birth or possibly in the second trimester or the third trimester.
Okay, how about you, Stefan?
Well, I mean, it's great. I have a feeling that R.A. and I are going to end up agreeing, because I think that we're coming from the same side of things. We both want the same things. We're just talking about different ways of achieving them. I mean, to start with, I mean, maybe I can clear up something with you on the theological side, if that is at all useful. For religious people, and I speak here primarily of the Catholic faith, babies don't go to heaven. Fetuses don't go to heaven if they die. You have to reach the age of reason, which I believe is 7 or so, before you have the capacity to sin or to not sin. and you have to be a virtuous person to go there. Babies and fetuses would go to limbo, as far as I understand it. Now, no limbo's been abolished as of 1989, but I think that's one of the issues that they have, that the soul in the fetus or in the baby wouldn't have the chance to achieve virtue and then get to heaven. Like, the fetus can't accept Jesus Christ as his personal savior and all that kind of stuff. I think that's the theological reason why they're kind of against abortion, because it doesn't allow the soul to be harvested for God in heaven and so on. So I think that's their side of things. I certainly agree with you that atheists are often mistaken for nihilists, and that's partly because of the word, right? Atheism is against theology or against religion, which is a negative term, right? And so it's like anti-violence doesn't let anybody know what you're for, in a sense. It's not like for property rights or something. So I think that this confusion that people have, where only religious people can be moral, and atheists are pretty indistinguishable from nihilists, I certainly understand that. I think that the question around abortion, my sort of particular perspective, is that abortion is a problem. Abortion is something which should be absolutely minimized. I'm sure that we can all agree on that, or at least RA and I can agree on that, that murder is negative, and murder should be whatever we can do to design a society where murder is minimized or where abortion is minimized, I think we're all going to be happy about. I mean, just at a pure economic level, it's very inefficient. It's surgery. It's expensive. It's invasive. It's traumatic. I can certainly tell you that, knowing a few women who've had this procedure done. It haunts them for their whole life. I mean, it is a very traumatic thing. I mean, they can't help but think every birthday and of the baby that never came to be. And so overall, I think it's a real curse and a real plague on society. And whatever we can do to minimize the prevalence of abortion, we can do. And I mean, to take the ethical aspect out of it, which I'm not saying I want to do for the long run, but, you know, if we found some treatment that allowed people to take a pill and then never have appendicitis, that would be preferable to the cost and risk and trauma, physical trauma of, an appendectomy. So whatever we can do to minimize the prevalence of abortion, I think that we are entirely, I think we can both get behind. Would that be something fair to say?
Yes, it would be fair to say, but I'd like to make one point on that. There are many people who would say, when you ask them, don't you believe that abortion should be minimized, they'll say, absolutely not. The goal should not be to minimize. We should have as many abortions as are wanted or as are needed, because they simply don't see it as a moral issue. For example, you might say that, why can't we find a pill that will stop people from growing hair? Because haircuts are expensive. You have to get it, trimmed or cut every few months. And why can't we have a drug that will stop our nails from growing? Because we have to trim them. But but nobody really seriously thinks of doing that. Nobody thinks of clean nails as a moral wrong in any way. And that's why we're not looking for those sort of solutions. And I think abortion is in a different position, because I think that it's absolutely meaningless. It's no different than clipping your nails. And those who have expressed Stefan, at least I think he's expressing that there is some kind of moral wrong. I don't know if that's based on the status of the fetus or the emotional status of the mother who's, wondering about what might have been. But I think there is a big divide in the pro-choice community over whether it's bad simply because it's expensive and annoying surgery, or because something intrinsically valuable is being killed.
Right. And my perspective is that I don't think, at least I've never had any success, and maybe you have, I've never had any success changing people's minds about that. I mean, I have my own opinion about it, and there's some degree I view that as a personal opinion about it. When I sort of look for practical solutions, what I try to find is, to take another example, we all dislike murder, right? Now, we can take sort of one example of the anti-drug legislation, and we can look at correlations between making drugs illegal and gang warfare and murders and so on. And so you can say, well, murder is really, really bad, and try and convince people, but that's not actually going to change the economic incentives for it. And so I think that if you can do what you can to change the economic incentives to favor less and less abortion as time goes forward, then I think that's the most practical thing that you can do, because I think if you make arguments to people simply about the ethics of it, then you may change a few people over the course of your life, but you're not going to fundamentally change what to me is a fairly horrifying situation of 1 to 2 million abortions a year just in the United States alone. So I think that it's very important to try and design a system that is going to minimize the incidence of abortion. And I think that's where you and I, R.A., will probably part ways, at least for a time, because my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you prefer legislative solutions, and I prefer pacifist solutions to these. So maybe you can tell me a little bit more about your perspective on how we use the state to control or minimize it.
Yeah, that I believe that the elective abortion should be criminalized. I think obviously is a very significant problem, drawing the borders of when it is medically necessary to preserve the life and the health of the mother, which of course I don't oppose in that case. But I do believe it should be criminalized primarily because it simply adds another social sanction. My main purpose is not to penalize or imprison the mother. The main immediate effect, what I'm saying is I'm not calling for criminal sanctions against the mother. I'm calling for the criminalization of the procedure, which would have an immediate practical effect of closing down abortion clinics. It would be unlawful to provide an abortion.
Well, it would close down safe abortion clinics, right? I mean, you would still get abortions. They would just be, I mean, you know, you've heard this argument, so I don't consider it particularly compelling. Abortions would still continue. They would just be much more dangerous.
They would continue at a much lower, there would be fewer
of
them.
That's interesting, because I just read some statistics that said actually it wouldn't be lower. They have, and I wish I had my numbers here with me,
abortion
rates were quite high without it being legal, there was no change.
My understanding of the statistics are this, and again, it's not something that necessarily is relevant to the debate, because you could say, well, criminalizing murder doesn't do anything because people are going to commit murders anyway, and the murder rate has leveled off.
Surely you're not comparing having an abortion to murder.
I think that's the position of people who are trying to protect the fetus, right? That it's human life.
Okay, well, that's really interesting, because I did hear you say earlier that you wouldn't... You would allow an abortion in case of the health and life of the mother.
That's correct.
The fetus is a life, just like the mother is a life. Why does the mother get to live and not the fetus? I mean, what's the
distinction? You have to assume that it's at some point in the pregnancy when the fetus can be extracted and allowed to live. Is that correct? Because otherwise, it's sort of irrelevant.
No. The law against making a law saying. I'm sorry, saying that it's okay to have an abortion if it might harm the mother. Why is that okay?
Because,
why does the mother get to live and not the child?
Because in that situation, the fetus is an aggressor. It would be the same as if someone were attacking you.
The fetus isn't doing anything.
But the mother would be aborting the fetus, which would also be an aggressor, wouldn't it?
It's not holding a gun to you.
It's killing. No, but it is killing her. Obviously,
Because it's part of her body.
No, but it would be something analogous to it's turned into a kind of cancer, right? So you would cut the cancer out because it's now harming the host organism. Is that sort of the
exactly?
No, I mean, I think that's in trying to sort of support R.A.'s approach here, or trying to clarify it in my own
way.
That it's become, that the fetus, that in this particular situation, let's just say the fetus has become toxic. I mean, I think we're no doctors here, but I think we can come up with some scenarios. The fetus has become toxic, and you're in the third trimester, so you could conceivably allow the fetus to continue to live. It would cause the mother to die, but then the fetus could be extracted from the womb and, you know, placed in an incubator and would be allowed to survive, but it would be at the cost of the mother's life, right?
It would be owned by the state.
Well, yeah, in that case, the mother's life, as far as I understand it, the mother's life takes precedence over the life of the fetus. Is that correct?
That's correct. In all situations, it does.
And can I just ask you a couple of other questions? I'm not trying to trick you or anything. I just genuinely want to find out about your opinions on these things. What about things like rape and incest? How do you feel about a rape victim who's been impregnated and her rights to get cancel the pregnancy or kill the fetus, as you would say, versus having to bring it to term?
Consistently and morally, obviously, I cannot draw the distinction. Legally, as a practical matter, I don't think it will be ever possible to enact a law in which you can bring a mother who has been raped to bring it to term. On the social level, I would, in fact, encourage a mother to bring it to term. And you'll find that the majority of women, I believe, do carry babies that are the product of rape to term. I don't know what the statistics are exactly, but it's not an uncommon thing at all. And
sorry,
I think,
sorry to interrupt. So I just wanted, you just cut out for that for a sec. So you would support the right for a woman who'd been raped to terminate a pregnancy? I just wanted to make sure I understood that.
The legal rights, I think ultimately, I don't want to say that I would, but yes, I'd have to say I can't imagine any law ever being passed that would not include that particular exception. I understand that it's a terrible inconsistency, but again, I'm saying from the moral perspective, no, I don't see a difference, and I would encourage a woman, just as I do, you know, one of the male pregnancies that we see at the crisis pregnancy center, you try to encourage them. And I think a lot of the dislike of abortion in that context, I mean, not the dislike of abortion, but the people who are promoting abortion in the context of rape, it is based on some kind of religious grounds that this is an evil seed. That it's, and
oh, Jesus. Okay, I'm going to have to stop here right now because we have to go to the intermission. This is getting ridiculous.
We'll
come back on it.
Okay.
We'll come back on it. Yeah, we're starting to run late at midpoint here. So we're going to go to the intermission.
But we've almost solved the whole issue.
We'll come back.
Why don't you go ahead, Allie, and tell us what this is going to be about.
Yeah, I made a remix of... South Dakota senator who had some really interesting comments about what did consist a legal right to have an abortion, when he suggested that a woman should be sodomized, raped, beaten, made pregnant, and messed up mentally in order to deserve an abortion. Oh, and she's also a virgin and religious. So I thought that it would make a really great dance hall, dance club song. So.
All right. We'll be right back.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
Napoli says most abortions are performed for what he calls convenience. He insists that exceptions can be made for rape or incest under the provision that protects the mother's life. I asked him for a scenario in which an exception may be invoked.
A real-life description to me would be a rape victim. Brutally raped, savaged.
Brutally raped,
savaged.
Brutally raped,
savaged.
Brutally raped,
savaged. The girl was a virgin.
Savaged.
She was religious,
savage.
She planned on saving her virginity,
savage.
Until she was married,
savage.
She was brutalized and raped, sodomized as bad as you can possibly make it, and is impregnated. Brutally raped, savage. Brutally raped,
savage.
I mean, that girl could be so messed up,
savage.
She was religious,
savage.
Physically and psychologically,
savage.
That carrying that child could very well threaten her life.
Savage,
rape victim, virgin. She was religious,
savage,
rape victim, virgin. She was religious,
savage,
rape victim, virgin. She was religious,
savage,
rape victim, virgin. She was religious.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
That was pretty good.
Thank you very much. I'm sure it's not going to be playing at your local dance club. but yes, yeah, savaged and. So my favorite part was when he said that she's brutally sodomized and then impregnated. I'm not
yeah,
sure
how does
he
that
knows,
work?
He knows how babies are born, but I did want to make one comment before we go too far, and that is the idea that women are haunted psychologically by abortions.
Hardship.
I just wanted to say, and I know it's a little bit like, oh, I'm the woman, so I'm going to know about this, but, you know, having personal experience, having babies, pregnancy, and all that is a really messy process. And it may not be as clear, as clean as people might think. Women lose babies, or if you want to call them babies, all the time.
Yeah, like
and
a third
do not
of the
go into an emotional tailspin. You know, of the friends I know who've had abortions, none of them have, you know, vigils at their birthdays of this child. But it's not just about, you know, going out and getting an abortion because, you know, they want to practice contraception, but just that this is a, if you drop by the maternity ward, it's full of women who have lost a lot of blood and didn't know they were pregnant, and that's my experience, that I may have had a little life inside of me.
Human life.
And they, yeah,
you murderous.
And they asked me, if you're pregnant, you want to save it in French. I had no idea what they said until you told me. But as I had lost copious amounts of blood, there's no hesitation, there's no haunting memories that I could have been pregnant, because after all, I had lost so much blood that there's no possible way any child could have grown at that point. But my mother, she had many miscarriages that were not as traumatic as what I experienced, having to go in and have an abortion procedure, which was basically, they call it a DNC, but it's just like an abortion, really, except I had to be put out and given a half of a Quebecois blood inside of me in order to get that done. But but if we're talking about abortion being negative, that is what I would think of as abortion being negative. I don't want to have to go into, even if it's a simple procedure, you get tremendous cramps and get extremely hungry, and it's a very, very physically uncomfortable and not so much fun, all the bleeding and all that stuff. It's much worse than what women go through every month, which is kind of sort of nature's abortion in a way. But no, it's, you know, abortion is not just, you know, somebody messed up and the condom broke and they have to go in and go to Planned Parenthood and worry if there's some organization trying to tell you that they're an abortion clinic when actually they are not, which is a crisis center which uses lying in order to help women. But I just wanted to clear that up, because I really don't think that it's that kind of emotional sort of fairy tale little thing going on. And as far as my position, I don't doubt that it's a life. That's not what bothers me. And I don't think it's exactly like a Terry Schiavo kind of life, because Terry Schiavo wasn't alive, but it's, in a way, it's sort of like a Terry Schiavo life, and then it doesn't have consciousness, and that is a big difference. But the fact that it's part of my body, you know, makes me wonder why the government should be allowed to hold a gun to my head and tell me, you know, use violence to force me to have a baby. And
well, if you don't have the right to your own body, you don't have any.
Well,
right
that
to
would
own.
that means that the government owns my
body
and owns the fetus inside of me, separately from me, which is kind of strange.
Which, by the way, is our next topic. But before we get to it, I just wanted to mention that on this issue of religion, my position in this, there's absolutely no arguments, moral or political, against abortion that are not religiously motivated. I've never seen any. And the issue of life at conception is a purely soul-based Christian argument. Why did you want to say something?
Oh, well, eventually, I hope we make the distinction between abortion, abortifacients, whatever they call it, drugs that cause a quote, abortion, and drugs that are taken
the
morning
thing.
After that prevent the egg from implanting in the lining of the uterus.
Right.
Hey, I'm intimately aware of all that stuff that goes on down there. So these topics do make a little stirring. It makes me really uncomfortable because I just, you know, I try to put it in a personal perspective because, after all, it's about uteruses, and you guys
absolutely
don't have them. And I know that there's no reason you can't have a good opinion about this.
Well, this leads us to our second topic. We only have about 15 minutes left, and we're only on our second topic.
But that's
oh, well.
I don't think I'll have much more to say than that. But.
No, it's okay. I'm just saying we talked so much, but I guess that's expected.
Yeah.
But our second topic is self-ownership. Does the mother own her body or not? Stefan, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think we should hear from Allie about that, which I think, yes,
well,
I mean,
you have no, there's no reason you can't know that.
I mean
the only difference between Stefan and I is our junk.
He doesn't have any ovaries.
I think that this was my opinion, and I'm sorry that we don't have the time to sort of go through the rigorous logical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the ethical issues are complicated, and there's gray areas in there for some things in human life, right? So, like, unpremeditated murder is always evil. Self-defense, it gets complicated. What's proportional force, and so on.
True.
I think that there's few people that would have a problem with a fertilized egg not being allowed through some medical procedure or some pill, like the morning after pill, the 486 pill, to say that, okay, the egg's been fertilized, but it's not going to implant in the uterine wall. Okay, and so it gets flushed down.
Yeah, that's not RU486, though. That's a different drug.
Oh, is it? Sorry, but yeah.
RU486 is actually an abortifacient.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, but let's just talk about the very mildest one, right? There's prevention, obviously, and then there's like the IUD, the condom, the pill, all that kind of stuff. So there's prevention, and then there's after the egg is fertilized, but before it implants, there's a way of avoiding that, and then there's after it implants, there's a way of avoiding that. Now, obviously, nobody except the Catholics is going to have a problem with prevention.
Although they do, the pharmacists are refusing that drug as well.
I don't think they're refusing the condoms. I think they're refusing the one that prevents the egg from implanting. I mean, pure prevention, like where the egg doesn't get fertilized.
Yeah, it's definitely not abortion, but
right. So nobody has problems with that. Few people, at least who are sort of religious fundamentalists, have problems with the issue of after the egg gets fertilized, but before it gets implanted. A few more people have problems after the egg is in the uterine wall. I think that's the 486 drug now.
Yeah.
As you move forward, and few people would feel very comfortable with a woman who's in labor at 9 months and somebody kills the baby. Like this. There's a continuum of levels of discomfort.
Well, I mean, there is the baby that was born with a parasitic head, and nobody seemed to have a problem killing the parasitic head, which had a name.
Right, and so I'm just saying that there's lots of continuums here around ethics. And on the other side of things, it's hard to see exactly how the moral nature of the baby changes from, you know, it's in the mother's vaginal push tube. I don't want to get overly technical here, but like in the mother's
womb.
Well, no, I'm talking about during the actual labor,
the birth canal, we can call it.
Baby's halfway out. I mean, it's hard for me to see how the moral nature of the baby changes during labor, where you can't kill the baby, and then after labor, when you can kill the baby.
Well,
sorry, when you can't kill the baby.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Obviously, we would look at infanticide as something immoral, and it's hard for me. To me, it's kind of a continuum. And
yeah,
I think it's very hard to say exactly where things fall in terms of right and wrong along that.
There are people who don't find infanticide immoral either. I mean, I've seen arguments that the human being does not achieve personhood until 3 to 6 months after birth. I saw one on the internet just the other day on somebody's blog. But as long as we're talking about the moral status of the fetus in utero, one thing which I think cuts both ways is this notion that its status is somehow mind-dependent, because I've seen quite a few people, many of them very ardent feminists, saying that there should be very serious penalties, both penalizing murder if the fetus by a third party against the will, and I don't think that you could really justify that kind of heightened penalty.
I'm afraid I didn't get that. I didn't hear that.
We didn't quite understand that.
Can you try that one more time? You just cut out a little bit there.
Hear me now?
Not really.
How about that?
Feminists are say there should be deep penalties for what again?
If a third party, so you kick a woman while she is pregnant.
Oh, okay.
The penalty should be much at the level of how you would penalize murder or some various serious form of manslaughter.
That's true. People are being penalized for that as well.
I mean, Scott Peterson is facing the death penalty only because the fetus of Lacey Peterson was killed. And there are some feminists who believe that's perfectly acceptable, that the status of the fetus is mind-dependent in a certain way. And I don't think that's a very consistent moral argument either, to say
sure
that.
Sure it is. It's a very consistent moral argument. If you start from the premise that the fetus is part of the woman's body, you should be penalized for killing a fetus in a mother's body in the same way that you should be penalized for cutting her arm.
Well, two different crimes.
It's murder. It's a different thing.
It's quite different. And, you could say, well, I give someone a hot cup of coffee and it kills a few cells in her mouth. Why can't she argue that, those cells in my mouth, I attached this moral significance to them. They were mine. They were me. The coffee was too hot, and I want that person executed or imprisoned.
That's kind of interesting, because you could make the argument, if you have this kind of opinion, that women should be penalized for eating too much fat or drinking alcohol or smoking cigarettes while pregnant.
And the one thing that's very different with pregnancy as opposed to most other moral questions is that it relies on the choice of the mother, right? I mean, if the mother says, okay, well, I can't get an abortion, so I'm going to chain smoke and I'm going to drink scotch and I'm basically going to force my body to
have...
But, I mean, it's different from something like murder, right? Murder is someone goes out and stabs or shoots someone. It's entirely voluntary, and the other person generally doesn't have any choice about it, and they get killed. The problem with, or the challenge about a pregnancy is that it is a life that is entirely dependent upon the choice of the mother, and that's true not only prior to, but after birth. And so, to me, it's in a slightly different category. You can't come up with, you can't come up with an objective measure to say, now it has moral rights, now it doesn't. Now, I think that the position where you say the moment that fertilization occurs, that's got some validity to it from a sort of logical standpoint. I think the problem of things like rape, severe birth defects, rape particularly associated with incest, is always a problem. Like if a father impregnates a daughter, then obviously you have a pretty horrible situation all around, both genetically and just in terms of the family structure and emotionally. So I think you have all of these kinds of problems that still go on. But what I do think is possible is that there's ways of structuring things to ensure that as little few abortion gets performed as possible. So for
instance, I'll throw in a monkey wrench. How about the infertility clinics? Women who desperately want children, oftentimes when they have implanted eggs, they have many eggs or fetuses or whatever in them, and they have to cherry pick out the multiple
and they're fertilized, right?
Embryos, and because the mother does not want to have seven babies,
right?
And they leave them with two or three. throwing another monkey wrench into
this is getting a bit technical.
I'm sorry.
the basic question in a raving atheist didn't answer it, yeah, because I haven't asked him.
The ownership.
The question is, does the mother own her body or not? Okay. We're really having problems with this connection. I don't know why.
How much more time do we have?
Can you hear me now?
About 7 minutes left.
How about now?
Okay.
Okay, I can talk?
Yes.
Yes, the woman owns her body, but my point would be that I think an argument could be made that a fetus or a toddler makes the same amount of demands on her body, whether it's inside or out. A toddler obviously compels her to use her body in a certain way.
Toddler's not a part of her body.
No.
A toddler does not use
the nutrition from his mother's own blood. That's ridiculous.
No.
I mean, the whole medical issue of the woman's body rejecting.
Come on.
It's all about the woman rejecting.
Francois, come on, there's not an argument. Can I make the point here? The woman is essentially a slave to the toddler. It's as if the toddler.
So then she shouldn't have the right to
kill it.
Live
while
the embryo does it.
A demand, very serious demand on her body. It is enslaving her. She must feed it. She must go to the kitchen.
It's not a part of her body.
I understand it's not a part of her body, but she still owns her body. And you own your body. And if I told you, Francois, here's a long list of things I want you to go buy from the grocery store, and I want you to go on my back and dig a hole and plant stuff, you'd say, no, this is my body. I don't have to do what you say. And I say, no, I own your body. You're a slave. That's what slavery is. It's ownership of your body. You have to do
this
for me. And the woman is in the same position with respect to a toddler.
But it has to do with what she wants to do, what her choices are, what her values are.
Are you saying that a toddler is exactly the same as a slave owner? You are seriously confusing the issues here. A toddler is not a slave owner. It's just a helpless kid that the mother wants to take care of. It doesn't matter if it's the mother that does it or someone else.
And what? Does the woman own her body? So no.
What?
Does the woman own her body?
Does the woman own her body?
Of course she does.
So the toddler cannot make her do anything?
Not making her do anything.
So she can pay no attention to it. She can let it die or kill it?
Yeah, neglect is generally considered to be a crime for if parents don't feed their children and they expire in the crib, that's generally considered to be kind of negative, right?
Exactly, because she is responsible for the toddler because she has decided to raise it.
She doesn't want to raise it. And she doesn't want to give it away either because she couldn't
stand the idea. Well, then tough luck, she should have had an abortion.
or tough luck, she should be able to kill it. I mean, I'm making the exact
She should have had an abortion.
Why shouldn't she be allowed to kill it?
Because it's not part of her body.
It's a conscious separate.
Hello?
But she owns her body. Excuse me, she owns her body.
Because the toddler owns its body.
Well, yes, but the toddler is unable to provide for itself, right?
And it has a very serious claim on her body as far as she has to serve it in the same way that a slave must serve its master. It's helpful.
No, she has a... Oh, come on. Don't get into that slaveholder bullshit again.
If that were true, then motherhood would be immoral.
The mother has a parental responsibility because she has decided to raise the child. She has
to keep the child alive.
This has nothing to do with slavery. Get off it. Be serious here. Come on.
I'm not being serious. And
no, you're not. This is ridiculous. Comparing a toddler to a slaveholder. Come on. You're confusing parental responsibility with slavery. I'm sure all the parents listening out there are saying, what a fucking moron. I'm not a... How dare you say that to parents? How dare you?
You have brought up the issue of ownership, and I've made the very rational point that the toddler makes as many demands upon its mother's body as the fetus does.
Because it's not.
Yes, it does.
It's not a part of the mother's body. It's a separate entity that she's decided to
But at one point she realizes that it's inconvenient. I'm saying, why can't she decide, this is my body, I don't want to use my body in service of the toddler?
Because it's morally wrong to kill other
people. Well, that's the same point I would make with respect to abortion.
No. Our point is that...
But the fetus is part of her body. That is the difference. She's decided to have the baby.
Whether it's part of her body or not, she still owns her body. Correct?
Yes. And?
Is the slave a part of the master's body?
Oh.
No.
It's not. So, how can you say that?
Because the toddler is a separate entity that owns its own body.
Is the slave and the master.
Yes, which has to do with parenting. How?
Slavery is morally wrong, so I guess parenting is morally wrong.
Which has to do with parenting, how?
The woman can say, I do not want to be a slave to the toddler.
There are millions of parents who are thinking, this guy is a fucking asshole, because he's equating my love for my child, my parenting, to being a slave.
Francois, many women say, for example, Susan Smith said, I want to have a different life. I don't want to be enslaved to my...
Well, who's child. Susan Smith, I mean, and why should I care what she has to say? She's a moron. You can't say that and not expect to be challenged.
Yes, this is correct. What does she have to say about all of this? She's making the argument that the ownership of her body is a justification for killing a human being. And that's the argument.
No, not a human being, a fetus. It's very different. Parenting is not slavery.
I would like to make sure everyone knows that I don't advocate killing your toddler. This is unbelievable. Probably put it up for adoption. But you can put a child and put the fetus up.
Well, this is the end of the show. We have to end here. So, in conclusion, abortion should be illegal because all parents are slaves to their toddlers.
No, because the woman owns her body.
Shut up! This is the end of the show. Okay, why don't you go ahead and give our coordinates.
Our coordinates. Our website is hellboundalley.com, and if you have something that you want to say about this, please email us at allie@hellboundalley.com. And what else did you have to say, Frank?
On our live show tomorrow, we'll have Eric Johnson, the author of the Quickstar blog, to talk about the Amway Quickstar scam, semi-cult. We're going to argue whether it's a cult or not. And on April 1st, our show will be...
April Fool's Day!
Yeah, and it's very appropriate because we'll have a show about Jesus.
There you go.
Jesus Morality with guests Aaron Kinney and Edward Grief. So thank you, Stefan, for being here. And thank you, Raving Atheist.
Thank you.
Can you just give us your blog again?
www.ravingatheist.com.
All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks a lot. Take care.